Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning. So, on the 23rd of July 2018, Zoe Houlihan was on honeymoon in Mati, where her life was torn apart by the Greek wildfires that raced through the seaside town. Her husband, Brian, who she had married just 4 days earlier, lost his life, and she suffered life-changing injuries. She has documented her harrowing yet inspirational, I have to say, story in her book, As the Smoke Clears. And I'm delighted to say she joins me now. Zoe, you are very welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's nice to be here.
It's great.
Well, socially distanced.
Socially distanced, on the line, absolutely. I just want to start off by saying the cover of your book is so beautiful. It was taken on your wedding day. Can we start with how you got to that happy photo? How did you meet Brian?
I met Brian on an internet dating site.
Woohoo! Well, that's given a lot of positivity to a lot of people around these sites, and you know, a story that worked out. So you met him on a dating site.
I did indeed. And it was about 4 years before we eventually got married. Mm-hmm. And it pretty much, from my perspective, I'm going to speak on behalf of Brian, since unfortunately he's not here. I'm going to say it was love at first sight on my part, and definitely there was an amazing connection from the very first time we met. But I'm assuming you've read the chapter, mm-hmm, about, you know, our first meeting. So
it was quite the first date, wasn't it?
It was quite the first date, but it could have gone slightly awry from the get-go, because Brian had taken literally the worst photo you could imagine. Like, Brian was a gorgeous looking guy. Mm-hmm. He really was. He was a very handsome man, as you can see from the photo on the cover there. But he took the worst photo ever for his profile pic, something I never told him about. So when I entered the cafe where we were due to meet for our coffee, there were two guys sitting at opposite ends of the cafe, and either one of them could have been Brian. But anyway, thank God Brian intervened very quickly and swiftly, stood up and called my name. And of course, it was he. Bearded guy was my Brian. So what was supposed to be maybe an hour for a cup of coffee turned into a 14-hour escapade. 3 dates in one, as I say.
Incredible, so, incredible. And then you dated and dated and sure then he proposed.
He did. And I mean, we moved in fairly quickly. Neither of us were spring chickens, you know. We'd both been around the block before. We'd both been married before. So it was, you know, within weeks we actually ended up moving in together, because he lived quite close by to where I am. So, yes, and then he proposed when we were on holiday in Cascais in Portugal.
That's right.
And it was wonderful, wonderful month.
Can you tell me about your wedding day?
Yes. I say in the book, you know, that sometimes recalling that is actually almost as difficult as recalling the event that took his life, the fire. Look, it was the most perfect day. It was literally the happiest day of my life. But as you can imagine, then it kind of, you know, it's hard sometimes to think back on that, because when you think back on your moment of perfect happiness, then you realize really what's been stolen from you. But I will say, you know, it was a fantastic day. I was like a giddy teenager from the moment I woke up, and I just couldn't wait to gallop down the aisle to Brian.
And just after that, you flew to Greece for your honeymoon. Can you tell me about the day you spent just before the fire?
We flew in a couple of days beforehand, but it was late at night. So the following day, before the 22nd of July, we just had a lovely day just acclimatizing. We went and, you know, just did basic things like shopping. Brian was a very sensible man. You know, he'd always say, first thing you have to do is hit the supermarket, stock up on everything that we'll need, you know. So we did enough grocery shopping to feed an army. And then we went to the port of Rafina that night for beautiful meals. So it was a lovely, romantic begin to our stay.
It sounds like from start to finish, like you had a beautiful time together. Now, you said it's kind of, it is difficult to, well, especially talk about your wedding day, but that beautiful time together, does that ever help on your really bad days or does it make it worse?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer because it depends really on the day. You know, right. I think I'm blessed in that I know how lucky I was, because I knew we had it good. You know, and often at times, you know, when you look back and you have regrets and you think, oh, if only I knew then, you know, I knew I was madly in love with Brian and I knew we were a really good team. You know, we got into a really easy rhythm together, if you know what I mean, in living together. And yeah, every single day he made me smile and made me laugh, you know, and he was a very warm, kind man. I'm hoping that that comes across in the book. So, yes, look, I know I was blessed, but I just feel absolutely robbed that he was taken from me just, you know,
yeah,
4 years.
I mean, absolutely. What happened next is nightmarish, and I won't get you to go through this again, but we know Brian lost his life in a horrific wildfire and you suffered life-changing injuries. And in an instant, your life became this battle with physical and mental trauma. You were rescued by an amazing man and ended up in a Greek hospital. Can you talk me through your knowledge of your injuries at that stage and what happened?
Well, at the very early stage, Manos Saliagas is the name of the man who saved my life. And he was a volunteer, actually. I thought he was a fireman for a long time, but no, he was a civil volunteer.
Okay.
And he rescued me, as you know, from the boot of a burning car. And when he was, I won't go into all the detail about the, you know, the first night, but basically my injuries from the very get-go, I mean, it's very difficult to put a word on how excruciating severe burns are, because I was burned from head to toe. My hair, I had long hair extensions, had sort of cooked into my face. So my face was very severely melted and immediately I lost sight of my left eye. You know, my face was just basically melted closed on that side. I describe it, it's like that Phantom of the Opera mask when I caught a reflection in that first night, where the left-hand side of my face was just blackened and charred. The injury that I probably was most fixated on was my left hand, because that was very, very severely burned. And it really was, I couldn't actually take my eyes off it, because, you know, the without getting too gross about it, the flesh basically was creeping off it, you know, and I could see bones and I could see tendons underneath. So my skin had just kind of melted away. And with burns, your limbs tend to curl. So my hand just kind of curled into this fist. So that was particularly grotesque. And I was very, very lucky not to lose that hand. I was blessed. This wonderful girl called Marianne from the Irish Embassy in Greece stepped in and she got me to a phenomenal hospital known as the Mitera. And there, under the care of Mr. Moutiklis, he saved my eyesight. He saved my hand. But my legs were also very severely burned. I had third and fourth degree burns. So I couldn't walk. Actually, I couldn't move anything. I couldn't even move my head at that stage.
Language barrier, though, I mean, and the pain that you're describing and just, you know, reading about it, but hearing it is another thing. You know, your shock of losing your new husband. I mean, what was going through your head?
Well, I mean, a tremendous sense of disbelief.
Yeah.
Very quickly after being rescued, I started to sort of edit in my brain what I had witnessed on that road in Mati, because I saw Brian die in front of my eyes. But I decided, no, that didn't happen. If I was rescued, then surely there was a distinct possibility that some other man or some other civil volunteer had swooped in and saved Brian. So I just kind of deleted that image from my brain and convinced myself that he was elsewhere in a different hospital recovering. And then, of course, my concern was, well, then he'd be worried about me. And what if I'm so disfigured from these burns that he doesn't recognize me if he's walking through intensive care? The pain in the Mitera was sorted out fairly quickly, because I was pumped up to the eyeballs on morphine and God knows what else. And they placed me in a little cocoon, a little metal cage, which I called my kukuli. That's what kukuli is in Greece.
How did your family find out?
The embassy.
The embassy.
They contacted my family straight away. My dad was very ill at the time. He was fighting cancer. And, you know, I was worried that they would see this on the news. So the embassy contacted my brothers, and my older brother, John, flew out pretty much immediately. And he had the horrible, horrible task of identifying Brian's body. He was taken straight to the morgue because, yeah, they did find Brian's body just a couple of metres from where I was rescued.
That floored me. And there's a part of the book that really stopped me in my tracks. 3 weeks later, you lost your beloved dad, who you said was quite ill. You got back to Dublin and were sent to St. James's Hospital. And by the time you had arrived, there was a rare condition called, what is 10?
It's toxic epidermal necrolysis.
Okay.
So it's quite a mouthful.
Wow.
A very rare and very serious form of sepsis.
Okay.
Well, I suppose sepsis is serious, but this is very rare. I mean, it's about 1 in 1 million people in Europe get it annually, and I was the lucky one this time around. And basically, when I arrived in St. James's on the 23rd of August, I was already pretty much unconscious. They did place me in a coma, but I was not there. I was gone in a state of severe delirium. And basically this condition, it starts as a fever and then your skin starts to blister. And when I say skin, I mean everything. My eyes were blistering, my mouth, my ears, everywhere, all over. But the real cruel twist of fate about this from the skin perspective is the areas that weren't burnt, the areas that were unaffected from the fire, then started to burst open. So I acquired a whole horde of new scars across my chest and across my back and across my right arm, which wasn't severely burned. So it was basically my body started to attack itself. I had multiple organ failure. I ended up on a ventilator. I had to have a tracheostomy to help me breathe. I had heart failure. I was on dialysis. So and obviously while all of this was happening, I was in
breathing.
A state of oblivion. Well, I was not only grieving. I mean, I, you know, thankfully I was unconscious, but coma, it's a fascinating state because I wasn't there, but I was there in some way. I mean, I could hear things that were going on. I could register my family's voices. I knew my mom was there and I knew my brothers were there and I could hear them calling to me, which I think is quite fascinating for anybody that might have, you know, a loved one in a coma. You know, you're there, you're in a parallel universe, but you are there. So, I mean, I could feel when I had the tracheostomy, I could feel them going in through my throat.
Wow.
And there is a particular sort of macabre nightmare scenario, how I describe what I was seeing when that was happening. But yeah, it was, and it's not that I felt pain, but I knew what was going on in a different way.
The unfairness of all of that is mind-blowing. Unsurprisingly, after what happened and the, you know, combination of, you know, the grief of losing Brian and your dad, you had PTSD. Can you describe that a little bit to us?
Yeah, I mean, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's a funny one. I had years of therapy to help me with this through a phenomenal doctor called Dr. Sonia Collier, a psychologist who works in St. James's. And she described it, I suppose the best analogy is, it's like if your brain is like a filing cabinet and, you know, you have the 23rd of July and that file, that immense trauma that happened that day, you know, should be at the back of the filing cabinet. It should be back in 2018. But instead, it's on constant replay at the front of my brain, right at the front of the filing cabinet. So the idea with all the CBT and all the therapy that we went through was to retrain my brain to stick it back where it belonged. Now, that doesn't mean that it takes away the trauma. Nothing's ever going to do that, or the memory of it. But it means that for things like flashbacks, for instance, it'll stop dragging you straight back there in the moment. So what should have been the past was in the present. The triggers that I had were bizarre. So sudden changes in weather were my triggers.
Wow.
So I could be having a perfectly happy day and then all of a sudden I'd hear the wind pick up. And wind in particular was one that really terrified me because the sounds of the wind on the day that we were running for our lives in that fire were just deafening. You know, and it instantly just clicks in. And in one instance I describe in the book, where I was standing in the rain outside my apartment block waiting for a taxi, and the next second, you know, it's no longer rain. They're like bolts of fire attacking my body, and I'm curled down on the footpath in the pouring rain, you know, wrapping my hands around my face, praying that I wasn't going to die. And I, you know, I wasn't in Ireland anymore. I was back in Malta. And thankfully, I was very lucky. A friend of mine, Orna, just happened to phone at that time, and her voice broke it. But it, I mean, there were just these flashbacks were so incredibly realistic. It's horrible that your brain can trick you that way. You know, one minute you're here in the present, and the next minute you're a million miles away, somewhere terrible.
You explain so amazingly in the book how you so gradually found you again. Let's talk about that. Talk to me about the tattoos, first of all.
I started lasering certain scars. The scars on my chest were particularly bad, and they weren't from the fire. They were from the TEN.
Wow.
So, and they were large, like one was about 6 inches, one was 8 inches, and they were large and thick, and they looked like slash marks across my chest. And they bugged the living daylights out of me because I couldn't wear any nice clothes. I had to have these silicone straps over the scars. So I started getting them lasered. I lasered some other ones on my upper arms and upper back. And lasering is a fantastic process. It's a bit weird, you know. Yeah. It's burning a burn, so you can.
Yeah.
the smell isn't too gross. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of out of the blue decided I'm going to get these babies tattooed, and I'm going to start wearing clothes again, clothes that I like to wear. You know, I wanted some sort of oriental dragon on my chest because I wanted my warrior stamp. I wanted to prove that I had fought through these fires and came out the other side. And I am now, by the way, the girl with the dragon.
You are, you are. Physically, Zoe, how are you doing though? Physically, how's things?
Yeah, look, things are okay. You know, there are good days and there are bad days. There are lifelong injuries, mm-hmm, and scars that I have to tend to. There are, you know, other, you know, physical issues, some medical issues that I have to contend with. So I'm still on quite a bit of medication, but I think I'm doing really well. You know, I'm walking every day. I just love walking. So I'm like a wind up toy. You can just point me in a direction and I'll go off and just keep going across the Phoenix Park. So my legs work. I mean, they give me pain, but they work.
Listen, there's three things that really struck me in this book. One of the things is one of the last things on this earth that Brian did was save the lives of children.
Mm-hmm.
One of his friends set up a GoFundMe page after Brian died, and that money raised was a huge help when you got home.
Yeah, manna from heaven, that was basically. Yeah.
And another one was you have an amazing bunch of friends and extended family around you.
I do. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. You know, I mean, they've just been there every minute of the day. Now, you know, they have lives to get on with. Things are at a different stage now than they were back then. But particularly, as you can see, you know, from the book, when the girls started coming into the hospital, and they took Humpty Dumpty and put her back together again. That's how I describe it, you know, in all of these various different ways.
Well, you are a warrior and you wear that warrior tattoo so well. We actually haven't even scratched the surface of your story. The book has so much more, including your emotional return to Greece, Brian's amazing memorial service, being reunited with the man who saved you, and just stories about Brian, who sounded like an amazing man.
Yeah, he was just one of the greats, basically, yeah. The kindest person I've ever encountered in my life. And, you know, he was fun as well and a great adventurer. And I'm hoping that I get a little bit of his spirit across in the story, because it is important to me. This is, you know, I've inherited his legacy and I want to keep his memory alive. So I'm hoping that the book helped do that in some way.
It's a phenomenal read. And I just want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing your amazing story. Hopefully I'll chat to you soon. Enjoy those walks. My God, you've time to do them in the lockdown. You know, get out there in the Phoenix Park. Zoe, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day. Okay.
Thanks a million.
Bye, okay, Zoe. Bye. And please read this book, guys. It is so life-affirming. And Zoe's bravery, it will stay with you forever. It really will. As the Smoke Clears by Zoe Houlihan. It is out now. Go grab it. We'll be back right after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.